Hi, I'm Adam Whitbourne, head gardener at Blarney Castle, and you're listening to The Sod Show.
Dublin City FM, Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
Welcome to The Sod Show. It's 103.2 Dublin City FM for Halloween 2014. And coming up on today's programme, we have a feature about pumpkins. We're also going back to Blarney Castle, where Paul and Adam met Peter Donegan, all coming up in a few moments' time. The show is brought to you by producer Peter Donegan, and on the blogs, Katrina Redmond. I'm Brian Green in studio. With thanks to our sponsors, greensacks.ie, their compostable bags for your home and garden. Check them out on the internet at greensacks.ie. Check them out in the supermarket, where you can put greensacks into your trolley. Ideal for use with your brown bins around the home. I promised a pumpkin feature. And also, we're going back to Blarney Castle. Pumpkins or Blarney Castle, which first? Tell you what I'll do first. Before we go to either, let's just say that tonight is Halloween. And I'm just making an appeal for people to be careful and be mindful that there are dangers around Halloween with regard to fire and fireworks and bangers and sparklers and all kinds of things. Keep your animals indoors and yourself be safe. Do enjoy Halloween. Let's hear about some facts that we crowdsourced on the internet about pumpkins. Cue the pumpkin music. Pumpkins are usually orange, but sometimes can be yellow, white, green, or red. The name pumpkin comes from the Greek word pepon, meaning large melon. Scientifically speaking, pumpkins are a fruit. They contain seeds, but when it comes to cooking, they are often referred to as vegetables. Giant pumpkins can be grown for competitions, with some weighing over 1,000 pounds, 450 kilograms for us Europeans. In 2010, the world record of 1,810 pounds was set. That's an absolutely massive pumpkin. Pumpkin plants feature both male and female flowers, with the bees typically being involved in the pollination. Over 1 billion pounds of pumpkin are produced in the United States every year. As a food, pumpkin can be baked, roasted, steamed, or boiled. Pumpkin soup is popular, and so are roasted pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin pie is a sweet dessert that originates in North America and is traditionally eaten during the harvest time and holidays such as Thanksgiving and Christmas. Pumpkins are popular decorations during Halloween. A carved pumpkin illuminated by candles is known as a jack-o'-lantern. The tradition is believed to have come from Ireland. Yes, Ireland, where they were used to carve faces into turnips, beet, and other root vegetables as part of the Gaelic festival of Samhain. 100 grams of pumpkin produces around 26 calories of energy. And coming in from Catherine Boland on Twitter, pumpkin is a storehouse of antioxidant vitamin A, C, and E. That's ACE, A, C, and E. It is ACE. Brilliant for mopping up all the bad stuff in our diets. Thanks, Catherine, for that. If you want to know more about pumpkins and maybe you want to try out growing your own pumpkin from seed, go to the show notes, because back on the blog in 2008, Peter Donegan did just that. Growing pumpkins from seed. Oh yes. And that's our pumpkin feature, 103.2. It's Dublin City FM. If you've done anything good with your pumpkins this Halloween, do tweet us a photo. We're at Sod Show on Twitter. We're This Sod Show on Facebook. And we are info@sodshow.com for the emails. Sodshow.com/news is where Katrina puts all the news that's good. And if you've got any news for us, that's where you send it. Let's get back to part two of Blarney Castle, where Paul and Adam are talking with Peter Donegan.
To my left is the gentleman that is Adam Whitbourne, a head gardener in Blarney Castle. You might remember last week we touched on the history of the castle. If you haven't heard that show and you're listening to this in podcast, stop it, pause it, don't listen to me anymore. Go back, get the old episode, download it and listen to that one first. It will all make sense and it will give you a little bit of a taster of just what we're on the verge of talking about. Adam, give me a brief rundown on this and a little bit of a brief recap. The grounds are how big that you look after?
We've 60 acres of gardens in the main estate, and that covers all different garden areas. So we've herbaceous borders, woodland walks, riverbank walks. Then some of the specific garden areas would be the poison garden, fern garden, and the water gardens, or the bog garden as it's commonly known as. And then the sort of the fine lawns and areas around the mansion also fall in the jurisdiction, and even as far as the actual green in the village. So it covers everything, really.
For those listening at home, we are sitting by the Coach House Cafe. If you really want to come and understand the ambient sounds that are around us, the planters in here, as by the way, are absolutely pristine. Everything in this place, you just literally have to come see it. But if you want to know where we record it from, if you come out of the Coach House Cafe, where the cash register is, top left-hand corner, just by the staircase, that's where we are. You'll hear the echoes of the sounds of people walking up there shortly. Paul, that meeting where you turned around to your most senior boss, that's Charles. Is he Sir Charles?
He is, yes, Sir Charles.
Okay. And you said to him, I have a cunning plan, Baldrick. I would like to... Yes, that's my reference to Blackadder. You're right indeed, folks. Well done, Panto crowd and Bingo crowd listening at home. But that meeting where you turn around and say, I have a cunning plan. I've got a great idea. I want to put in a poisonous garden. Was there a moment in response, or was it... No, that's a great idea. I totally understand it. How did this pop into your head?
Well, unfortunately, it wasn't my idea. It was Charles's cunning plan. So he actually went to Kirsten Bosch Gardens, and they have a poison section. And that was his original idea that got him thinking about it. When he returned from there, he said, I'd like to do something along those lines. And so it was actually Sir Charles's cunning plan, as it happens.
Okay, for those who aren't aware, Kirsten Bosch Botanical Gardens are in South Africa. I have been there. I have indeed. I'll put a link to, I think it's up on the Donegan Landscaping blog, but I'll put a link to it in the Sideshow notes. And if you're stuck for that and I forget about doing that, at Sideshow on Twitter, just let me know. That said, the climate in South Africa, you might say, is a little bit different to where we are in Cork, is it not?
Although, yeah, that's definitely true. So obviously that affects what we put in, but... It's amazing how many garden plants, common garden plants, actually are poisonous. And many plants are used in modern medicine and homeopathy and other areas that would fall into that jurisdiction as well. So really the message behind the poison garden, it's not to shock people and it's not about poisonous plants. It's about how we use those plants and where the positives and negatives can occur. So really the witches and wizards of their day, it wasn't magic, it was knowledge. And that's where this garden really kind of it excels, is that we're able to actually illustrate that very well.
The botanical tags or tree tags, have you ever gone to the botanic gardens in Dublin or any botanic gardens for that matter? The trees usually have a black kind of a little wee postcardy thing nailed to the trees. In the poison garden they have that, and they have the additional skull and crossbones, which tends to ward people off. Also to that you have it's like kind of similar black steel that the furniture here by the Coach House is made of, and some of the plants are surrounded in these kind of dome shaped, it's like as if you were to hold somebody in captivity in some kind of, I don't know, Dragon Slayer type film. These plants are contained within them. It does kind of make when I walked through them, I didn't even see one of the tourists kind of cross over onto the grass and try and get a little bit close up. I don't know what it is. Does it have that effect on you?
I think it does to a certain extent. It has that kind of look about it that would sort of ward you off going any closer. But we designed them in such a way, we wanted them to be a genuine medieval artifact, let's say. And they were built for us by a local blacksmith named Mark Keeling, who's extremely good at his job. He's definitely one of the best in Europe. And he built them using the traditional methods. So they're the real authentic thing, the real McCoy.
A lot of gardeners going through, if you haven't been through, number one, do it. And by the way, it does have the usual list of the Taxus baccatas and the laburnums and everything else that goes with it. The more unusual ones, give me three of them for those listening at home.
I suppose we have American poison ivy in there. We have, I'll talk about foxgloves because it's something that a lot of people don't realise. Digitalis, source of digitoxin, which is actually used in modern heart medicines. And I suppose Atropa belladonna, which is the source of atropine, another modern medicine. These are now synthesised, but these are the original sources. So there's a lot of information there that you can learn just from reading about the sort of the historical side of these plants.
I spotted lavender in there.
Yes, lavender would be one of the essential oils that's highly toxic. Distilled essential oils of most sort of floral plants, let's say, and herbs, rosemary, things like this.
And there you go, things you never knew. Does it get in your nerves? Because I think Paul was kind of saying to me that it's right beside, it is a well landscaped, beautiful layout, and it looks quite well as a garden. And then individually, as I said, you've got the individual plants, and it is, it's a whole education in itself. But does it slightly get in your nerves because its location is right by the castle, and therefore I suppose the question I was raising to Paul was does it get the visitors by default, or does it get it because of what it is, which is, I suppose, are you getting the compliments because you are extremely intelligent, or are you getting the compliments because of location, if you understand the question that I put to you?
I think there's a bit of both there. A lot of the tourist visitors that would come into the castle wouldn't necessarily be coming for gardens. And the poison garden is something that's, it's a little bit different, a bit gimmicky, I suppose, in some ways. And they get drawn in for a look. And if we draw some in and just create a bit of interest, all the better. We also get a lot of visitors that come specifically to see the poison garden because they've heard it's there and have heard from friends. So I say, yeah, a bit of both. It wouldn't get on my nerves because I think that we've different types of visitors and different things appeal to different people.
Paul, the different types of visitors that Adam's referring to, they tend to be twofold. One is obviously for...
Well, we twofold, really. One is that a good percentage are coach tours, visitors, and then obviously we have people who come by their own means, or car, bus, whatever it may be. But, you know, look, people come from all over the world. You know, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was quite amazed that we had a bus group come from Siberia. Because we ask every person that comes through the ticket office what country they're from. So at the end of every year, we have a detailed breakdown then of where everybody has come from. So that helps us then with certain other aspects in terms of maybe our guide maps, what languages to get them in. Because obviously if we see a boost in a number, then it might be a case where, look, we have to get that language. So, you know, at the moment we're looking at maybe Portuguese and Japanese because we've seen a rise in the number. A couple of years ago, it was, we got the maps in Mandarin because we'd seen a rise in the numbers from China. So, you know, it's very useful.
Are you finding, though, that more and more are, you know, kind of, you might say, getting lost in the woods, that they originally came for that, and now they're kind of veering off, and they, like me, think Adam is an absolute horticultural genius? Is it one of them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, from the comment cards and from, you know, comments on Twitter and Facebook and all that, we have seen a rise in, you know, people exploring further afield. You know, I kind of talk about, when you look at our map, there's that little inner circle that has, you know, the castle and the caves, the dungeons, the poison garden and the cafe, and maybe just a little bit of the rock close. But people are spreading out now further, you know. As I said, you have a walking route in here. It's nearly up to 5 kilometres long. So, I mean, you could literally, you know, spend the day.
Adam, what's the proudest part that you've landscaped? What's the bit that you kind of turn around and say, Peter, I've got to show you this. By the way, you didn't know how intelligent I was. Check this out. And what is that within the grounds?
My own favourite part would be the fern garden. I like the atmosphere in there, and I like the approach to it. It's been laid out in such a way. I mean, we were lucky. There was an old quarry there in the woods that provided the perfect amphitheatre, let's say. And we laid the path out in such a way that when you approach it, you discover it. So I'm proud of the way that people actually come up on it and then have to descend down into it. So you're able to see the tree ferns from above and then go down and actually walk through the canopies, let's say. So that would be my favourite area. So therefore, I suppose, my favourite achievement.
Is this the wee little spot where I saw the waterfall?
Yes, that would be it.
Okay, so for those of you aren't aware, again, hit me up on Sodshow, at Sodshow on Twitter or at Donegan Gardens if I forget. There's a wee little video. It's kind of like a miniature waxy stargle. If you don't know the painting, my mother and my grandmother, I think, had one in the house, and it is just a sight to behold. When we were there, it was quite empty. It was just the three of us, really, and there were some people on the way up and some people who had obviously come through that area and were on their way back, but it's kind of like a little bit of, how would you say it, a little bit of heaven is probably the right way to put it. Adam, if I was to bring the love of my life here, if I was a man in love and I wanted to propose to my good lady, there are that many assets to the grounds of the estate. What would be the top five, or is there a top one romantic place where you should go within the grounds?
Oh, Jesus, you could go anywhere you like. It's so nice. I'd say, okay, Lakeshore, very nice. Top of the castle, obviously, bit of a cliche, but it's done quite regularly. The Fern Garden being my favourite. Possibly, if it was a slightly druidic leaning, let's say, the Druid Circle and the Rock Close would be quite interesting. Or probably somewhere I'd go would be into the Arboretum and under one of the lovely trees.
Okay, five places you never knew that really existed. How does it work on the landscaping projects bit? Again, I know from my own experience, again, be it Dublin City University when I was 23, or be it when I was in Scotland, or even private gardens that I've worked on myself, there is a want as a plant lover, a garden lover, a horticultural person to want to put your own bit of imprint on the estate, to leave that something, to take that stand back and say that I am really so proud that I did that within the grounds. The fact that you get to say I did it in the grounds of Blarney Castle is something, I suppose, that just adds that extra little bit of pride to it, because you've 300,000 plus bazillion visitors passing through who get to, you get to sit down maybe with a cup of coffee and overhear them pay you compliments, which is, you know, when you want to do a project, when you want to change something within the state, how does something like that work?
Well, this is one of the big advantages of it being in private ownership, is that it's one phone call and one man, one decision. So we can actually kind of just sit down and chat about it, mention an idea, mull it over for a while. I might do a sketch proposal of something. And at the end of the day, the important thing is having that kind of relationship, working, trusting relationship, where and the owner's able to kind of get the gist of where you're going with something, and then you leave you to it. So I think I'm very lucky in that Sir Charles does do that, and he's very forward-thinking in that sense, that he will actually listen to ideas and projects and then say, okay, well, let's try it and see.
Give me an example on this. One of them we saw was it the Belgian gardens. Have I got that correct?
The Belgian beds, yeah. They are they're azalea beds planted through the estate in one area that run up along the mansion. They're called the Belgian beds because the original plants that were planted there came from Belgian breeders. But they've gone into, I suppose, over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been gradually replanting and redeveloping them. But they were all on one side of the road, and so rather than walking through the Belgian beds, you'd walk past the Belgian beds. So this spring, we discussed the idea of adding extras on the other side of the road, and in the end, what I did is I actually marked out the beds on the lawns, and just with coloured pegs and string, so that you could drive past them and get an idea of the scale and the size. And once Sir Charles saw that and sort of got the idea in his mind, and he said, okay, let's go ahead, plant it up, and if I don't like them, we'll take them out again.
Wildflowers were another thing that you seem to have added. You noted that on travels. How is all that working out? Because again, and you might think I'm being overly generous with my compliments. Normally I just refrain from giving them, but some people tend to do wildflowers because it's maybe a little bit cliched, or it's a token kind of a gesture. You have done it en masse so well, it's kind of unreal. How did that all come about?
Well, we have kind of a long-term plan, a wildlife plan, where we're trying to improve sort of the wildlife areas within the estate. As part of that, we're clearing out areas of woodland that would be single species plantations and replacing them with native woodland. And the wildflowers came about as part of that whole idea. So to just increase the biodiversity, let's say. And we contracted a man called Sandro Cofola, who is the specialist, let's say, for Irish native wildflower seed. Now, the important thing is to make sure that you do actually use Irish native wildflowers and not some import, because you want to make sure you have the correct species mix and the correct plants for the area that you're living in. And Sandro was excellent in advising on that and supplying them. So the next thing is really establishment, getting the correct sowing regime and then the maintenance of them. So we're in our second year now, and I'd say 80% has been successful, with a couple of areas where the grass outcompeted and we need to change them. But overall, it's been a big success.
Outside of that, there are the tropical beds, and there are the fantastic looking best example of herbaceous borders that I've seen in a good few years, I should add. But they both seem either A, pretty young, or B, extremely well maintained. Again, another compliment to your list.
Yeah, no. Well, things are young. So you got that. You hit the nail on the head in that one. Things are young and fresh, and the key is now for us to maintain that. And the tropical border is in its second year. We overwinter a lot of the plants indoors. So some people would say we're cheating. We have things growing in there that definitely shouldn't be growing in Cork. Bird of paradise plants flowering away in late spring is a bit of a sight to be seen. But do you know, that's what gardening's about, is pushing the boundaries, experimenting and cheating a little from time to time. But it adds interest for our visitors.
Pub quiz round, the oldest tree or trees within the estate.
Taxus baccata, which is the yew tree down in the lower rock close on a little island bed. And there's three of them there, the oldest trees on the estate, around 600, possibly older. They have to be seen to be believed. Great big fat buttresses would be the way I'd put it.
The most photographed tree on the estate. We've had this discussion on our way, so I half know the answer to this one.
This is a western red cedar, Thuja plicata. Possibly up to 100 years old or so, but they call it the elephant tree because it's got this big bowed limb, and it kind of where it bows over, people climb onto it for photographs. And you can get entire families across this thing, it's so big. And the bark is worn completely smooth by the passage of bottoms over the years.
Your favourite area of newly planted trees?
I suppose the Upper Arboretum area, we've put in quite a lot of new trees in the last 3 or 4 years and a nice collection there. But if I'm forced into a decision, I'd say actually the Pineetum would be the one for me, because we started that with only a few trees and a lot of clearance. There's now over 200 different conifer species in there, lots of rare and unusual. And it's been a bit of one of these obsessions, let's say, for the last couple of years of trying to source these plants.
Your saddest day horticulturally, in brackets, on the estate, where you felt like crying?
Saddest recent one was last week. Some of you listeners have probably heard of summer drop, which is a phenomenon where a branch literally falls off a tree for no explained reason, let's say. And we have a 300 to 400-year-old beech tree at the back of the mansion. It's a massive thing. Only 3 weeks ago, I was stood under it with a tour group, showing them it as my favourite tree on the estate and explaining how its limbs are intact, it's very healthy, it's perfect, etc., etc. And then last week, a limb the size of a tree came down for no apparent reason. Perfectly healthy-looking limb, and I'm not exaggerating, it's taken nearly a week to clean up.
And your happiest day on the estate, where you turned around and ran home and went, honey, you will, just wait and I tell you, you ask me why I'm smiling, why is it, ask me why, that one. Did you have one of them within your 8 years or 10 years here?
That'll be after the interview today.
When I'm gone.
No, there's been many, many happy days. I think, trying to recall something particularly recently, it's silly things sometimes, something coming into flower that perhaps you were surprised by, or getting delivery of a particular plant you've been obsessing about trying to get hold of, germinating certain seeds. I think for me, this spring, I sowed quite a lot of rare and unusual conifer species that I couldn't buy them. So I decided, right, I'll find the seed and I'll grow them myself. Now, this is going to take some patience because you're talking 5 or 6 years to get anything reasonable size. But why not? So this year I managed to get 2 or 3 different rare Podocarpus species to germinate. And coming down in the mornings, looking into these little boxes and seeing things popping up is very satisfying. And maybe not to everyone's sort of cup of tea, but I find that quite exciting.
What does the future hold for Adam Whitburn?
I suppose at the moment, more development. And we're extending the walking areas around the estate. There's more woodland walks, more boardwalks going in here. And I'm thoroughly enjoying sort of the ongoing challenges associated with what is really developing a really classic historical site on what is a great estate.
Do other gardeners look at you and heckle you and go, I wish I was you?
I don't know, do they? I think I'm very lucky to be in the position I'm in, and there's a lot worse places you could be in the world, let's say.
That's true. Adam Whitburn, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
No, thank you.
Paul, the final word, I suppose, goes to you. You don't, in short, do tours of the gardens, just to clarify that one.
No, we're a self-guided attraction. I think that kind of suits, you know, what we have here very well, where, you know, we kind of, you know, want people to go and explore it at their own pace. I think that's quite important.
If people want to get in touch, you do respond on your Twitter account. If they do want to get in touch, you do have one of them?
Yeah, at Blarney_Castle is our Twitter.
Okay, and also all of the details, again, are available on the website, which is?
www.blarneycastle.ie.
You did note to me as well that you have, was it 360 photographs available?
Yeah, we had a company from the north contact us a couple of years ago. They do 360-degree photographs. So we have one of the Fern Garden, which has been mentioned, the Rock Close, which has been mentioned as well, and the Poison Garden. So they're on our website as well if people would like to check them out. They're fabulous. It kind of gives you, you know, you can, even though you haven't visited here maybe yet, you can kind of experience what we have before you come.
Okay, again, if you're stuck and you want those, and you forget and you get the underscore put in the wrong place, send us a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow or sideshow.com. Just head there if you're in the future and you own a DeLorean motor car, or you know what the 25th of October 1985 is all about. If you don't, Wikipedia, long story. And you just search for Blarney Castle Sideshow. It'll come up there in the googly thing. In the meantime, Brian, back to you in the studio. Paul, thank you so much. It's been a real genuine honour.
Thank you very much for coming. It was a pleasure showing you around.
The wonderful Adam and Paul from blarneycastle.ie. You don't need to go into the internet and type in blarneycastle.ie. Just Google Blarney. It's the number one hit. Geographic related results, of course, pending. This is The Sod Show, 103.2. Get in touch at Sod Show on Twitter, The Sod Show on Facebook, info@sodshow.com if you want to email us. If you've got any news or items, or if you want to be interviewed on The Sod Show, get in touch with us. We're always looking for guests way into the future because we've piles of stuff to get through up to Christmas. But if you want to get in touch, I know things go quiet in the landscaping and gardening world. Get in touch with us now. Now will be a good time. With thanks to greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. With thanks to Peter Donegan and Katrina Redmond, we're back next Friday at 3 p.m. Stay tuned to Dublin City FM for some more great programmes. And have a safe Halloween.